Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in the south side of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is holding fort in East Nashville. Chase McCabe doing the same thing in Bellevue on the west side of town. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We've got a great show in store for you. We are excited about it. Scott Nickel will join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get into a lot of good stuff with him going on the Predators front. Of course, he runs the Milwaukee Admirals as a general manager and in charge of player development on the Predators side. Bob Nightingale at the second hour of the program. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him at noon. Chris Mason, weekly chat with him at 1 o'clock. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Doing well. Ready for another day. Let's go.
Yeah? Everybody excited about the gyms opening up on Friday?
Boom. Well, they aren't here.
Yeah, you're right. You guys are in Davidson County. Sorry. Yeah. I don't really know how I feel about that.
I can tell you how I feel.
Going to the gym. By the way, they want you to wear a mask. I don't know. Working out with a mask. I don't know. I may just stay at home and continue doing the home workouts. I don't know.
I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to say it. That's stupid. It's stupid that they're opening the gyms. It's stupid. That's how I feel about it.
It is interesting how like that was like at the top of the list, right? It's like when Atlanta's mayor came out and it's like, you know, gyms, salons, and it's like, wow, okay. Barbershops, it's like, okay, I get it. People are dying to get a haircut. Okay, I understand. Blondes are going extinct. I get it. People need to get their stuff done to their hair. But the gym thing, yeah, I'm all about health and everybody's staying in shape. But I just thought that was strange that it was so high up on the list to reopen. That's just me.
No, I agree with you. I think it's dumb. I just think it's way too soon to do that. And I saw the guidelines, and I love how we now have to differentiate between guidelines and rules, and that guidelines are, we would really prefer it if you actually adhered to this, but we're not going to shut you down if you don't. I mean, we would like you to. These are our guidelines, but the showers and locker rooms are closed, so that right there, you're going to create a mess because not everybody's going to hear that, and they're going to show up and be like, oh, where do I change? So you have that. They want gyms to take temperatures of everybody and wipe everything down every 2 hours, which I just – my trust level in that is not very high. Just I don't know why we can't wait a little longer. I think it's – and like we said, Davidson County, not involved in that. They're not reopening yet, but – I just worry.
Look, I can appreciate it. I can appreciate it. Radio butt is a real thing, and we don't want radio butt. But, you know, we can get through a little bit longer without gyms opening up. I'm just saying. Even though Marquise told me he's concerned about there is a concern level of radio butt going on with him right now.
It's very concerning, man.
And so it's real. I told you, it's real.
It's a real thing. But I work out at home, so it's good. I'm still not going to the gym. Even radio butt can't scare me enough to go to that gym during the pandemic.
A mirror, not a house full of mirrors, can scare you to go to the gym, right?
No, not at all. Not even this life. I'd rather collect radio butt than to collect the coronavirus at this point.
Yeah, look.
Good choice.
I am at the point where when this is all over, you know, I'll get back on my workout routine, and I'll, you know, I'm trying to eat better, which is very hard to do these days. I mean, it's very hard to just not eat just because you're bored. So working on that, but I've been going on walks with Sawyer, so that's been good. But I just rather wait a little longer. Let's not do something that's going to make this come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like opening gyms could do that. But hey, what do I know?
Anybody see Real Sports last night on HBO?
Can I ask a question before we move on? Because I did see some of the Real Sports.
I would love to hear your question.
But what did the governor say yesterday about this? He extended the safer at home until May 29th. So how does that affect some of what we're talking about? Because we all heard the same thing about they're going to open things up on –
I got an email yesterday saying, why? See you Friday. See you Friday. We'll be back open.
Yeah, and I've seen that too. But at the same time, we have the executive order number 30 that will remain in effect until May 29th.
You're saying that the governor said that? That's from the governor?
The governor, yes.
Yeah, I don't. I'm very confused on it too, if I'm being honest.
I just know that in Davidson County, we're still in the same thing, which is what I, you know, it affects me the most, of course.
Right.
But
sure,
I'll tell you what, if I'm living outside of Davidson County, you got a lot to, there's a lot of messages.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm looking at the Y's that are opening. It's basically every Y in Middle Tennessee, but the ones in Davidson County, they're all opening back up other than the ones, I guess, you got the one downtown, it's in Davidson County. Is Green Hills, is that what is Green Hills? Is that Davidson? I'm not sure.
Green Hill, yeah, that's Davidson.
Davidson, right? Okay, so you probably got I don't know, three locations in Davidson County, but a lot more than that.
Yeah, let's see. You're talking about the Y, right?
Yeah.
Green Hills, downtown, mm-hmm. Bellevue, Donaldson are the four that I can think off the
Those
top
are
of my
side.
Head.
Yep. Is there one on the east side? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
One on the
east side. So that's
Margaret
five. There's two. I guess those are Williamson County, the Brentwood. Both of those are Williamson.
Yeah, the Brentwood and, right, all that's is Williamson. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there – I would assume there are more. I mean, they popped up. There was a run on Wise for a while where they popped up everywhere. So I would say – if I had to guess, I don't know the answer, but if I had to guess, there's more than five in Davidson alone. But, yeah, the one in Bellevue is right by the house I grew up in. I mean, it's, you know, it's not too far. So that's Davidson.
So according to yesterday's thing, barbershops, hair salons, nail salons remain closed until May 29th. If I got that right?
That must be Davidson County.
No, that's... that's from the governor for the state of Tennessee.
Say that again. Say that list again.
Certain businesses, organizations, or venues that offer close contact personal services will remain closed, which includes the following: barbershops, hair salons, nail salons, among other small businesses. It also states that entertainment, recreational, and certain other gathering venues will remain closed, including bars, nightclubs, and live performance venues. Restaurants are encouraged to continue carry out and delivery orders for food and alcohol under the new order.
Yeah, so yeah, I got that pulled up here too. And that's why we're all confused. So you're not going to open bars and hair salons, but you're going to open gyms. And that was the reaction yesterday when the governor said that gyms could reopen. And we're all sitting here going, what? Why? That doesn't make any sense. So that's the confusion. And I just think it's a bad idea. I think you're gonna make this thing resurge by – that's the one place I would think you wouldn't want to reopen. I mean, if it's not safe to get a haircut, why is it safe to go in and work out when everybody's all sweaty and right up on each other?
Well, I would assume that they're not going to be right up on each other. I would assume, once again, without knowing for sure, that they're going to
right. You
got to
have
move.
A plan. If you're going to open, you have to have a strict plan.
Moving some stuff around and spacing things out, I would guess, because I think from what I could tell in reading, it was just going to be the main floor. Obviously, none of the like Zumba classes and
pools.
I think all those classes, none of the pools, the pool area, hot tub, all that is not going to be open. I think what I read was just the main area.
Yeah, I will. Well,
so
it doesn't matter.
So I'm
for
looking
me,
at I'm, the. There's a list of There's a list of like 18 things on here that are the, I guess the proclamations of this return. We're still in a return to work. It says return to work, but the safer at home order is effective until May 29th. So again,
it's
really hard to tell exactly what we're doing
people.
Here.
Yeah, I'm very confused.
But social gatherings of 10 or more remain prohibited. Places of worship, weddings, and funerals. Is that there? You can or not?
I don't. No, you can't. No, he's encouraged churches not to gather.
Staying at home when possible, limiting unnecessary activity, still critically important. Okay, good. Persons are urged to wear face coverings in public places. Nursing homes and similar facilities closed to visitors. Special care should be taken to protect vulnerable populations. Businesses should follow health guidelines and ERG guidelines. Obviously, if you have symptoms, you feel sick, stay at home. Employers shall not require or allow employees with COVID-19 to work. Well,
jeez.
There you go. That makes perfect sense.
That's enlightening. Good to know.
Continued closure of certain businesses, organizations, or venues. Take out alcohol sales by restaurants and limited service restaurants to continue in order to encourage carryout or delivery orders. Local orders, suspension of laws that would limit application of this order. Again, it's hard to tell exactly what the rules are here. Did anything really change?
No.
Other than we know gyms are open?
Evidently, gyms have been singled
out. And you can, I guess, return to work?
It's time to get in shape.
Yeah,
it's time to get in shape, Nashville.
I guess. So basically what I'm learning from this is I can't come to Rutherford County and get my hair cut.
I was of the understanding that was the case, but I guess not. After I was not aware of what Willie just said.
I didn't even notice this until last night.
Yeah. We're about to run a contest on the show of who wants to cut Chase's hair. Like, that's where we're at. Not really.
Boy, I don't know.
Take the Clippers. Go with the Chris
Mason. Get a Flo-bee.
Willie Donick action.
I might. The beard is, let me
just
tell you, the beard is impressive right now.
Yeah?
Yeah. Now that I could handle on my own.
A little Ryan Ellis-esque?
Yeah, I could handle that on my own, but I've decided it's the quarantine beard. And so it's you know, I usually would participate in the playoff beard right now, so I'm growing the quarantine beard for when it's over.
All right, good deal. Let's come back with Scott Nickel. Have a good conversation with him. Predators director of player development and general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals. We'll talk to Scott on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Becker on this Wednesday morning, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello and good morning to Scott Nickel. He's general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals and the Predators director of player development. Scott, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Good. You guys?
How's quarantine life in the Nickel home?
It's going. I got three kids. I got a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, and a 13-year-old girl, two boys and a girl. So our boys do a hockey academy here in town. So their school hasn't changed much. They still do online school. So they're trying to finish their school and write their finals so they can hopefully once this pause quarantine ends, they can get at the rink and start skating and stuff. And then my daughter's, she goes to Sunset Middle School. So they're canceled for the year, but doing a little bit of online school. So everything's fine here. Get up, work out the boys and getting caught up on all the Zoom calls and WebEx and I'm dialed right in now.
Do you know how to do the background, change your background, put a picture behind you? Do you know how to do that yet?
I do, yeah. Yeah, pretty fancy.
I've got to learn that. We've got a call tomorrow after the show. Willie, Chase, I've got to figure that out before that call after the show. So we had Joel Ward on yesterday, and Scott, I posted a picture yesterday on Twitter that my wife sent me during that interview. Willie and I were doing a show at Blackstone Brewery with you and Joel Ward. That was our player show. Back then, Willie, if you remember, this was after Darcy Hordachuk had left, and so it became the player show And so just two players would come for that hour. And I know you probably do not remember that incredible hour of radio you did with us with Joe Ward. But it was just cool to look back and see, gosh, 11 years ago. And he obviously spoke highly of you and the organization and Nashville. And Joel's a great guy. What was he like as a teammate? What memories do you have of Joel Ward as he's called it quits this week, officially retiring from the NHL?
Well, I think it just, he, like he said in his article, he enjoyed every single day. And I think guys that, you know, come up maybe not the traditional path of going to Canadian University and all that, you enjoy, doesn't matter what level you're at, NHL, American League, you enjoy every day just being enjoying around the guys and the teammates and your coaching staff, fans, doing the radio shows, doing all the player appearances. He's very active in the community, and that's, you know, you have 750 of quote unquote the best NHL players or best hockey players in the world that play in the NHL. It's not usually the best. It's you find your role, you find your little niche, and you're a good person. You usually get to prolong your career maybe for an extra few more years because of that. So I think Joel just, you know, amplified, you know, overachieving, finding his role, being a good teammate, and scoring some big goals down the stretch. So it's great to see, because all these young kids now, because I'm on the player development side of things, they think they should go right from college or junior right into the NHL, and they're in such a fast track. It's nice to see other guys take different paths where you're not in such a rush and a hurry, and when you're ready to play in the NHL, you're ready to step in and contribute.
You know, part of your job is, you know, you can throw on the tape, Scott, and you can look at talent and probably figure out things, a lot of things, or most of what you need to know about a player by just watching tape, watching, you know, their games. But, you know, there's a bigger component to that. You also, you have to be around the person to know their makeup, right? That's another part that you have to figure out that I think is much harder, is what do they have inside of them? You know, what's their makeup? What do they love? What, you know, what's their work ethic? You know, what are their morals? The stuff like that. The other part of the player. And what does it say about a guy like Joe Ward, who I believe was 24 at the time, goes to the draft with his mom. He tells us his story and doesn't get drafted and probably knew he wasn't going to get drafted, but yet still chose to go to the NHL draft. Like, to me, that tells me a little bit about his character. What about you?
Yeah, I think that just, you know, when you don't get drafted and you walk out of there, you have that pit, that burning fire inside you. You know, and then once you do go to training camp and as a free agent or 11th round draft pick or a 7th round draft pick, you're like, huh, I can play with these guys. You know, so it takes a whole lot. It's your drive. It's your inner belief. It's your, you know, you're always going to get knocked down. You're always, and see how you respond when you get back up. Because everybody's path, you know, even you're going through adversity between injuries, the call-ups, the send-downs, to playing as an overage and junior. Like, it's not a smooth path. And then the ones who can stay with it and have a great attitude and dominate and contribute at the level they're at, those are the guys that you want, because they're always searching to get better. It doesn't matter if you're a Sidney Crosby to Roman Josi, they're always searching to be great and to put the work in and trying to, you know, they see these young kids come in and, you know, they're doing skill work all year round. They're doing it in the summer. Like, the training for the NHL guys has changed so much where it was just like, okay, let's do the track, let's do plyos, let's lift, let's do that, and let's stay off the ice. But now you're incorporating your skill work a couple times a week on the ice through July, through August, through June, just to, you know, stay sharp and to improve and grow as a player.
Was there anybody that you came across in a short amount of time and you went, oh, they have everything, they have it, and, you know, this guy's going to be special? Is there anybody that you encountered through your playing days or on this side of things that a brief encounter and you went, oh, yep, he's got it?
I guess probably my first training camp, I was with the the Buffalo Sabres. So it was like Patty LaFontaine, Dale Hawerchuk, McGillney. Like, it was those guys. Like, when I watched McGillney skate, I was like, on it. He was, and I'm a 17-year-old kid going into my first training camp with these guys. I was like, this guy was off the charts. I was just, there's no way he could skate that fast and laterally that fast. And but at the end of the day, all those guys, I go from Buffalo, I go to Calgary, all these guys, they work. Like, they're always the hardest. They're driving practices all the time. They're not just going out there floating around. Like, they have substance to every practice. And how can you not just follow along if you're, you know, a third, fourth line, second line, even a guy on your own line? And, well, how can you not keep up to them all the time? So those guys are very special, and those guys really change your franchise and really change the, you know, thinking and the culture of the players when you have those high-end guys that just drive all the time.
Talking to Scott Nickel, who, of course, runs the Milwaukee Admirals and is in the player development department for the Nashville Predators. And, Scott, in kind of going down memory lane with Joel, we were talking about his path, which, as you pointed out, is so unique. It's unlike almost anybody, and there's a lot of different ways you can get to the NHL. But I remember you and I had a discussion. It might have been between periods of a preseason game, but you were noticing him just like the whole crowd was. He was really standing out in some of the games, and none of us had ever heard of him. And when you look at his profile, you know, coming into that camp, you're thinking, this guy doesn't have much of a chance to make it. But do you remember your first impression of him when he started standing out?
I just think the size and his power, like, he wasn't what didn't get him, you know, drafted or invited right away was skating, but he was deceptionally, he could get there, and he was so strong on the puck down low. Like, he could hang on to the puck, he could stick his rear end out there, and it was really like, and the back then, that was kind of what you want. You wanted to grind down low and keep the puck down low. And he was very, and that's how come he could go up and down the lineup, because you need guys like that on your first line to your fourth line who can get the puck, hang on to it, make a play, and get to the front of the net. He was a big horse. It was tough to move him.
The Predators, out of necessity, being an expansion franchise, had to find guys like that. You were one of those guys too, those role players that may have slipped through the cracks that were available that turned into really important players for the franchise. Do you think that helped you become a player evaluator, a guy who knows how to develop talent? That seems like an important skill for anybody.
I think even just now we're always, look at the Colin Blackwell, look at the Rocco Grimaldi, look at the Jared Tenortis. These guys are 24, 25 years old, and they haven't had a whole lot of NHL games. Blackwell didn't have any. Tenorti hadn't played one in 3 years. Grimaldi was kind of up and down a little bit. But those guys they've gone through the wars, they've gone through the battles, and they kind of get there like, okay, this could be my only opportunity, this could be my only chance. You know, some guys get 9 lives, some guys get 1. They've had probably their lives before when they're younger, but they're still young. So that's what you're looking for, those guys who can – you know, maybe they've been in an organization, they've had some injuries, they've been McCarron, he's traded for him for Salamaki last year. He was out last year with a shoulder injury. Sorry, we traded for him this year. And then, you know, and he had a great year for us down there. And he's come, he's a big guy. He's kind of that same mold into that 24, 25 where he has experience and he can be a really – you know, valuable player going forward. So, of course, we're always looking, especially for the salary cap era, you're always looking for guys like that who can play for league minimum, have an identity, and bring something special to the team. And I think it's very important.
I can relate to this some, having been in a minor league camp for baseball. And you observe, you know, the guys that got the high pick and the big signing bonus tended to get more attention from a lot of the staff, and maybe they were on a little bit of a faster track. So when you're somebody like yourself or Joel Ward or some of these other guys, and you just mentioned a couple of great examples on the team right now where you need a few turns, you need somebody to give you a break, and as you get a little older, you keep improving. But it does take a coach or maybe a couple of coaches on the staff, and Joel mentioned Brent Peterson was the guy for him that sort of said, hey, you know, we see something in you. You know, don't put yourself, don't label yourself as a guy that may not make it here. But you need that coach to trust that you're going against all the people that want to see the first and second round picks be the stars.
Yeah, like, and that's why when you get drafted to your NHL team, you have that. You have somebody in your corner because you've had development guys with you for the last 3 or 4 years. So you're vested in these kids, and you need somebody in your corner. It is hard. You have somebody who can stick their neck out for you and believe in you because, A, you've spent 4 or 5 years with them in Boston University or North Dakota or, you know, Moose Jaw or wherever it is. So you know the makeup of these kids. And it is true. It's like anything. You need somebody just to, you know, it helps also as a player. You have that relationship where you can go to him. It doesn't matter if he's management or coach and you have that relationship. You can be honest with him. He's like, what do I have to do to make it? And you're like, you got to change your game. You got to, you know, just be simple. And you're not going to be a top six. You're going to maybe start on the bottom six and work your way. Like some of these things, it takes a while for kids to realize that. I think a good example is Yakov Trenin. Yakov came in as a second round pick out of the Quebec League as a scorer, and he's from Russia. So he's thinking, okay, I'm a skilled guy, big guy, playing every situation in junior. And he tried that in this first maybe year in Milwaukee, probably the first year and a half. And then we keep beating the drum of, okay, just go straight lines, chip it by, guys, use your body, take the puck to the net, play on the inside, not toe drag in the middle, not cut to the middle. And now he started to get rewarded by doing it. But it takes time for these kids to change their identity. And the ones that do change, they're usually the ones that make it, because if you're just stuck and you just keep relying back on, you know, what you're comfortable with, it's hard if you're a one-dimensional player. So it's good to see these guys change and, you know, grow, develop, and be a part of our group.
Talking to Scott Nickel, of course, player development for the Nashville Predators. And, Scott, it's no secret Milwaukee was having an incredible season. And there's always that balance between you're looking to develop players, but also it's nice to win. So what's the biggest benefit you've gotten for the fact that this team is as dominant as much as it has?
I think it was just the signings that we did 2 years ago with the, you know, the Blackwells. Jared Tenorti was fantastic. He really set the tone for our group for the last year and a half. Some of the trades that we made, even for McCarron to come in, Cole Schneider, a really good American League player. So we have a really good balance of hardness, skill, a little bit of veteran guys who still aren't in their mindset stuck in the American League. You know, I think we do a good job of whoever's playing well, whoever's, you know, earning it gets called up. And it doesn't have to be your high prospects. I think through the culture of our team, it's like, okay, I'm playing well. There's an opportunity. He gets called up. Look at Matty Olivier this year. He's playing well. He got called up into that role. So we have a good balance of, you know, some personalities that really help out in our group, keep it light. We can play any kind of style that we want to play. If it's skilled play, we got Tolanins, the Pitlicks, Daniel Carrs, the Freddie Goudreaus, Tommy Novaks. If you want to play a hard physical, all right, let's have a little bit of a goat rodeo here. We got the Oliviers, we got the Tanner Janos, we got the McCarrons, we got the Healy's. So that's what I like. And then at the end of the day, we got the two goalies with Grosnick and Ingram that, you know, both had 20 wins and they're both tops in the leagues and wins and save percentages. So it's a really good mix. And I think if you look, we've been busy this, you know, this quarantine session, I guess, this pause by locking up and signing our guys back, our depth guys with Arvin Atwal, Josh Healy. We signed a kid out of Providence, Spencer Young, that we had at development camp a couple of years ago. So we got a lot of our depth guys signed, and a lot of our guys like Alex Carrier, who was fantastic for us. And I think that's a contribute to our coaching staff, our organization in Nashville and Milwaukee, because guys are signing early and they want to be a part of it. So We don't get those guys signed up now if they didn't like to be there and want to be a part of the community. And you see Grosznick being the American League player of the year, the out like community service and all that. So it's fantastic. It's a good group, and it's sad that it ended the way it did. That's the way it goes.
Scott Nickel is with us, and expanding on that a little bit. I mean, I ask this with a little bit of humor involved, but how much of a balance is it that, you know, you have a good team there in Milwaukee, but obviously the goal for these players is to one day play in the NHL. So when a guy has, you know, earned his spot and is able to move on to the NHL, do you have that sense of, You're a proud GM that they've achieved their goal, but you also hate that you're losing a great player on your team?
Yeah, but that's part of it. The best part of my job is making that phone call and saying, congratulations, you guys. Welcome to the NHL. Get on a plane, get to Nashville. You guys play Chicago tomorrow night. Like that is the best part of my job, is calling these kids and telling them that they're getting called up. The worst part is when you got to tell them they're getting sent down. So I guess it balances it out, but the American League is a hard league. You got different ages from 19 all the way to probably 31, 32. You got guys who are single coming out of college. You got guys who have kids in school. So, and you're all a little bit, they're fully vested in the American League, but they also want to get to the NHL. So it is a balancing act, and one guy gets called up, and that's why I think you call up the right guys. And it hockey players are smart. They know who's playing well, who deserves a shot. So if you buck the trend and you go against that, that really takes a little while, a couple of weeks to kind of, figure that back out and get the team playing again. So I think between our coaches, Carl Taylor and his staff, they've done a great job with communicating with the older guys and the young guys and having a good mix.
Do you feel like that the American League, and, you know, obviously I keep up with it just to know what the prospects are doing, but do you feel like it's gotten even more competitive over the last handful of years with just the talent that keeps coming through?
For sure. Like, it's the league's getting away a little bit of, it's not just the rough and tumbly league anymore. It's a lot of skill. We play four lines. All four lines play the same. It's not, we don't shorten the bench. It's you're playing sometimes three games in three nights. You're on the bus. It's not glamorous. You're unpacking your bags at 2 a.m. and hanging it up for the trainers and getting back, and you got an afternoon game. So it's good though. We talk about Joel Ward, myself, and you appreciate the NHL. You appreciate the travel, the private jets, to the nice hotels, the days off in between games, practices, not 3-3. So I think you're wired and you're, I guess, hardened a little bit to play in the NHL, because you'll do anything scratch and claw to stay up there.
Last thing quickly, Scott, did you get a chance to watch any of the virtual NFL draft? And if so, what did you think? Because, I mean, this may be what drafts are going to look like in 2020.
Yeah, I thought it was – I love looking at different living rooms, and there are so many funny little shots and stuff, but it was good. I thought it ran fairly smoothly, and I'm sure the NHL will probably do the exact same thing. It's nice that we're up second. We can kind of go in and pick the Titans' brains and what they did. And I think it's sad because we're one of the only teams that I really enjoy our NHL draft, having the first round and then having the day on the floor, second round, all the teams there. I really enjoy that. So hopefully we can get back to that again. But looks like this year it's probably we're going to do the same as the NFL.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the visit. Continue to be safe at home, and we look forward to talking to you in person here, hopefully sooner rather than later. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good, boys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Scott Nickel. He is the general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals and the Predators director of player development. We will come back with more here in the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Marquise, right back at it again today with the good music, bringing the good vibes. Aren't you guys glad that we are sports talk show and not politics because
– Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why talk, I chose this career.
Because, you know, our first segment. So just within the last 10, 15 minutes, I see tweeted out, hair salons and barbershops in Tennessee will reopen next Wednesday, May 6th, according to State Representative Ryan Williams. This does not include Nashville.
I remain.
So he's saying something different than what's in the mayor's thing from yesterday?
I'm reading from this. These are the local TV stations tweeting this stuff out. Here, literally in the last 10, 15 minutes.
Since yesterday?
That's why I said, aren't you glad we do sports talk and we're not news talk?
Yeah.
Because within the last 15 minutes, these tweets are coming out. Hair salons and barbershops in Tennessee will reopen next Wednesday, May 6th, according to State Representative Ryan Williams. But that does not include Nashville. So there you go. Just to swirl the pot up a little bit more. Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some things that don't confuse us as much. So I was having a long conversation with somebody yesterday after the show, and we got into the subject of, you know, hockey, and we're going to talk to Bob Nightingale from USA Today to kick off the second hour. Major League Baseball seems like they're getting closer to them making some announcements or at least putting together a plan to get back on the field. And so we'll get into all that with Bob Nightingale coming up at 11 o'clock. But hockey is trying to do the same thing, the NBA. All these sports are trying to figure out what is the best course of action. And I'm just going to see how you guys answer this question that was posed to me. No matter what it ends up being, right, four sites, whatever, that's really not relevant to the question I'm about to ask you, what was posed to me. Do you think there will be a player or players around the league that will say, you know what, I don't feel comfortable doing this, and I'm out?
I think it's possible. In fact, if you take a look at some European soccer leagues, that's exactly what's happening. That was on the crawler this morning.
Yes, the EPL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the EPL, there's a number of players that are basically saying, you know, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. So we'll see how that ends up happening, which is why I think it's important that behind the scenes, this committee, and can you imagine having the responsibility, if you're John Tavares or John Van Riemsdyk or Connor McDavid, and some of these guys are still pretty young men, you know, that Connor McDavid is a young player. He's wise beyond his years, but he's still, I mean, imagine being right out of college, basically, and deciding being involved in a group that you're representing how many players? 300 players, however many there are in the league? That's a lot of responsibility.
Sure. At a very young age, I certainly wasn't equipped to be in that room and having the discussions that he's having. But how do you think, and just for the sake of this conversation, let's just stick to the hockey subject since we just talked to Scott Nickel, and I was telling you I was having a long conversation with somebody yesterday after the show, and they posed that to me when we were talking about a possible return for the National Hockey League, and he said, do you think there's going to be a player or players that will oppose coming back and just say, you know what, peace out. I think I'm good. I'll just wait till it's safer.
Well, I think if you're on a team, and, you know, I've brought this up before, I think if you're on a team that is out of it and there's really no point, then, yeah, you probably
won't. Well, we're not talking about that. Let's just say the regular season thing is dead.
But that would influence. That might influence your decision or your opinion on it, right?
Look,
if your team has a chance to win it, you might be a little more inclined to say, let's go for it.
Let's be honest. The longer this goes on, the sillier it gets, the notion that they're going to come back, and these teams that have nothing to play for, are you going to ask them to reboot, lace them back up after 3-4 months off and go out there and play some meaningless games?
It depends on how much money they can get out of it. I mean, that's what's driving this whole thing is the money.
So you think like the Red Wings and the Ducks and Los Angeles and those teams that they want to lace them back up and get out there and train for weeks on end to play 10, 12 games and then shut it back down for the year?
No, they probably don't.
Well, even if they do, does the general manager want them to do that? Does the owner want them to do that? You know, because you don't want anybody to get hurt.
Yeah, right.
They're playing for next year. There's nothing to gain by playing this year. I think they're gonna that will be a logical conclusion to draw. I think, Darren, getting back to your question,
let's say you have a team that is
going to be in the playoffs, right? And somewhere along the spectrum, maybe you're the one seed, maybe you're the seven seed, maybe you're the three seed, whatever. I think if you really have honest reservations, the time to do it is in the committee meetings. When those players come out of the room and then they go to the player reps and they say, okay, here's what we're talking about. What do you think? Take it to your team. When those player reps go to their team, the team has to speak up. If they feel that way, they need to say it, right? Because I don't think they're going to get any backlash if the players come forward as a group and say, you know, we got a lot of guys that really don't want to do this.
Yeah, but okay.
Then
okay.
I think we got to live with that.
But what's a lot of guys? Half the team, a third of the team, a fourth of the team, the entire team, one guy. That's a totally different conversation. Is it one guy? Because this is what that's the hole we went down. And I said, so how do you think that'll be? How do you think? What if it's a key guy? What if it's somebody who's important?
Well,
and that one guy tells his teammates.
It's a players association.
I don't feel safe, guys.
So there's, don't you think to a certain degree they have to have those discussions behind the scenes and then come forward as a group? Or do you think there's an avenue of saying, okay, anybody who doesn't want to play doesn't have to play? Or do you think it's all for one for all?
What if 90% of the group says, heck yeah, of course we're coming back, and 10% says, no? Well, what do you do then? If you said it's got to be all for one, well, what is it? Is this like a jury? Do the 90% need to convince the 10%?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that process works.
Well,
I think the solidarity is going to be important. And if not, then if you don't get it right away, then you go back and say, okay, here's where my guys have a problem. How do we address these things? And then you go back to the table and maybe you can address some of it. And then maybe you go back to that group and now you're down to 5% or down to 4%. And then hopefully you work your way to a point where even the ones that aren't thrilled about it feel good enough about it to go ahead with it. I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility.
How long is this going to take?
Hopefully it's happening right now.
They don't have the time to be fooling with all this stuff.
Hopefully it's going on right now, every day.
Right. Well, that's why I thought it was a good question. Of course, none of us know. I mean,
it's a great question.
Forming an opinion. So, what do you think there's a chance that happens? And I didn't know how to. I said, do I think there's a chance? Yeah, good. I have no proof. I have no evidence. But to sit there and think that literally no one's going to say, what if a guy? I brought up this scenario. What if a guy has a wife? They're expecting their first child. You know when she's due? In like 2 months. Right?
And he's got to go. All kinds of stuff like that.
Right? And he's like, wait a minute. My first child is going to be born. I can't leave. Once I get wherever, I can't leave. She can't come there. So she's got to stay behind. And so I miss the birth of my first child. You don't think that couldn't be a real scenario? Was somebody in the league?
It absolutely could be. And how about that? Larry Brooks listed some very interesting health examples of what a few of the players have and are dealing with, right? Capo Caco, the great 18-year-old phenom for the Rangers. He's got some health condition. I think he might be diabetic. I'm not sure, but you have guys like that. You have Brian Boyle, remember, who is a cancer survivor.
Sure. Yep.
So that's just a couple of examples that he used, and I'm sure there's a few others behind the scenes that have some complications that certainly might have that individual saying, I might fit the profile of somebody who's more susceptible to this virus than somebody who isn't in the same boat.
So how do you handle that? What do you do?
I don't know. Maybe they find that it's too much to handle. That's very possible, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, look, I think that there's going to be discussions, and if you have, I don't know what the percentage is, but if you have certain players bringing it up, and you know, when we've talked about this before, I said it depends on who those players are. Like, if Crosby and Malkin are all of a sudden like, you know what, we're not going. Like, I just don't feel comfortable with this. Then you're going to get people's attention, and all of a sudden the conversation is really going to be taken seriously. Now, to you know, you guys bringing that up of if you got a player that their wife is pregnant or something, that changes the game. They have to listen to that. And if they don't, it's a very, very bad look on the league. So I think that they would take all of that into consideration for sure. But again, how many are going to feel that way? And I'll reference what Rick Stockstill said to us yesterday. Why is it not safe for the fans, yet it's safe for the players that are tackling each other and laying on top of each other?
That's a totally different – it's not an apples to apples. Those are student athletes. These are professionals. They want to get paid. Those
right.
kids.
It's their job.
Still not
and
safe.
That's their job.
Right.
No,
but I think totally this is the other. Animal. That's the other end of the argument. Right. Is that the one end of the spectrum is what we're talking about. Trying to take every precaution and bring up all of the issues that raise causes for concern. Then the other side is, and Darren, you've used this phrase a lot. There's risk in everything we do. Right, every hockey player when they step out on the ice for a game, you could get hit with a puck right in the face, you know, or you could turn your ankle real bad. You could have a career ending injury anytime you play. So, you know, that is what they're going to have to weigh, right? Is what risk is appropriate to continue to play and make a living, right? And for the livelihood of everything. And that's what they have to fight and see if they can come to the right thing. And the decision might be that we're not there yet, and maybe we shouldn't play. So all of these things have to be considered carefully. I think they've said all the right things to this point. And I wouldn't blame anybody for raising all these concerns and saying, what are we doing? You know, I'm not sure we're ready for this. Maybe in another few weeks they'll feel differently. But you got to talk it out, and every day you got to try to absorb all of the information that's out there.
Yeah, and how comfortable is it going to be for a player to say that to his teammates?
I would hope you would. That's why you have a player rep that I would hope allows you that kind of openness, right behind the scenes.
I think it has to be an open discussion at this point. I mean, there's way too much on the line for it not to be. So I think if you have a player that truly has that concern, then they need to be comfortable. And the player rep, everybody on the team would be receptive to it of like, hey, look, I have a legit concern. I understand there's a lot of money involved here, and that's why we're trying to figure this out. But, I mean, I don't feel safe doing
this. Well, let's not be phony about this conversation. Okay, if I make $8 million a year and Willie makes $7 million a year and Chase makes $1.4 million a year, Chase is going to want to be out there a heck of a lot more than the two of us. Okay? That is the harsh reality about it. Look, the ones that are going to feel the most uncomfortable are probably going to be the ones who have made a lot more money. And you know what?
That's an interesting point.
They will survive without the rest of this year's paycheck. Okay?
Well, what about this?
It's the ones that haven't made their money that are going to want to get out there. They're the ones that, you know what, I get it, it's risky, but I need to make more money. That is the harsh reality about it. The ones who have not made the money, they're going to be gung-ho. They're ready to get out there. I'm not saying all, but the ones that I feel like that will stand up and like, I got three kids. I've made $34 million in my career. I don't really want to risk this. I got three kids and a wife at home, and I've made my dough. I'll just wait till it's safer.
I think that's one of the dynamics of any players union, right? Just like the football players. That was a huge thing that they were – it's a very different perspective when you're trying to stay in the league with the league minimum versus a guy that's made a lot of money and everybody in between. So what if you're a free agent in the next year or two? as opposed to somebody who's under one of those long contracts, 6-7 years.
Out on the ice. Exactly.
Yeah. But part of the thing to consider is this is part of the deal in the collective bargaining agreement with hockey is there's that whole escrow thing, right? That's been a bone of contention from the players. If the league revenues don't hit the projection, the money's held in escrow and the players lose that money. So it's held back, and then you hopefully get it back if they make all of the if they hit all the hurdles. But obviously they're not going to do that, right? The league, even if they play, is going to fall short of the projected league revenues. And so that is something that the players will feel, right? Even if you do make a lot of money, you're going to lose the money you're supposed to make, or some of the money you're supposed to make.
By the way, this conversation applies to all the sports. This is what they're all going to be dealing with. All of them. There's going to be...
Well, I just think about baseball. Baseball, the players aren't getting paid until they get the service time, but they're not getting paid until games start. So there's another, even the top players, even the players with guaranteed contracts, they're not getting anything because they haven't started the season.
We will start the second hour with Bob Nightingale from USA Today. We'll talk about Major League Baseball and their future plans. We do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.